same as domestic Norwich.
Domestic Norwich, we're walking through. The theming's impeccable.
Yeah.
It's like actually being in domestic
Rooms
Norwich.
Of damp terraces, a fish and chip shop. It's amazing. It's so immersive.
So where are we off to?
We're going to see Frozen Part 2.
Part 2 is its official title.
Yeah.
It's been out a few days. It's already had the biggest opening weekend of any Disney animated feature. 127 million domestically, I think that is.
Yeah.
What have you heard about it?
Well, I've only heard one thing, and I didn't read any further, but they said the story was very complicated, and the songs weren't as good as the first one. So,
high praise.
Yeah, and it was one of those circumstances where I was trying to avoid spoilers, or even opinions,
yeah.
But the headline blared out at me, and before I knew it, it was in my brain.
Well, one thing I thought was very interesting about the trailers, particularly the first trailer, they did something which they've kind of only really done before with Star Wars, which is a trailer that really shows very little about the plot.
If
the second trailer showed a bit more, but
if the headline is to be believed, it's because the plot is so convoluted. There's no way.
Well, I'm very intrigued because that suggests if they've gone for a complex plot, that they're sort of trying to appeal to the people who liked the first Frozen film but are now older.
How long ago was the first Frozen?
2013.
Okay.
So they've had 5 years.
Yeah, almost 6 years.
So 6 years almost, yeah.
Unless, was that a Christmas release as well?
I don't know, but it's been a while. It's been enough time for those kids to become basically young teens.
That's true, because even the very youngest, the 4s and 5s,
yeah.
They're now
11,
much more mature.
11, 12.
Yeah, yeah. Although 5 years from 4 is 9.
Okay, maths is not my strong suit, but the point still stands, I think.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get in our car. It's not a Ford Mustang this time, unfortunately. So as we drive, let's talk about some predictions that we have for the film. What do you think is going to what plot points are we going to have in this film?
So based on the first one, the trolls are going to have some sort of part in this one, and they were really pointless before. They were basically there for merchandising.
They had a song that was total filler.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame, actually, because all the rest of the music in Frozen, the first Frozen film, was so good.
So I reckon the trolls will have a more plot-driven
role. Yeah,
role.
And
this time.
And a darker tone overall is clearly being heavily implied.
Oh yeah,
by
the trailer suggests that something like world-changing is going down,
yeah.
and it's
bigger
have
than
to save the day.
Yes, it's bigger than just winter in Arendelle.
So I reckon it's going to have a climate change analogy.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, really clear climate change.
Yeah,
message.
It feels like just the order of the day, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For all of these films, and
yeah.
Rightly so.
Yeah, if that's the big antagonist, that does kind of make sense at the moment.
Because the Disney animators will be very aware of living in Trump's America.
Yeah.
And pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord and all of that.
And finally, what's our other prediction?
So I reckon that Olaf will have a extremely dramatic sacrificial death.
Yeah, he's going to martyr himself for
yes.
the cause.
And it will be like saying goodbye to Bing Bong in Inside Out. It will be like one of these, I cried in the cinema when Olaf melted himself for some reason or something. That's my prediction.
Yeah. Or it'll be a kind of like, see, this is what's going to happen, guys, if you don't sort out the climate.
Oh, yeah, because they were making light of it in the last film.
Yeah.
You know, his song about becoming a puddle or whatever.
Yeah.
What happens to solid water when it gets warm.
His extreme innocence will lend itself quite well to a really, really devastating sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll realise that even though you found him annoying the rest of the time, you're actually quite sad to see him go.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see if it happens.
I hope so.
Yes,
I really hope so. So one thing that is in the trailer is it's revealed that Elsa has been hearing a voice of some kind, which is presumably what compels her to go on whatever quest she's going to go on.
Yeah, so is the voice an exterior voice or an interior voice?
Yeah.
And but is this another analogy, this time about mental health?
Yeah, because the entire thing about Frozen 1 was that it was supposed to be a metaphor for mental health, wasn't it?
Oh, really?
Yes, because, well, I mean, that was an interpretation of
it. Okay, so tell me about it.
Well, you know, she shuts herself away, and it's all, she's like entirely filled with cold, and the whole kingdom becomes cold because she has closed herself off, and her powers are about being isolated and on her own, and she has to, but because she has this ice power, it's like a vicious circle. Do you see what I mean? So there is an interpretation of it being the whole thing being a mental, and it hurts the people around her. Exactly. Yeah.
And people demonize her when actually the person she's most likely to hurt is herself.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so is this going to be a furtherance of that?
Possibly.
So we've just watched Frozen 2.
Yeah, and overall impressions were?
Really good.
Pretty good.
I really liked it.
Yeah, you were very taken by it, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were a few clunky moments. But actually, I preferred it to the first one.
I think some of the lyrics of the songs were a little clunky. That would be my only complaint. But that's a nitpick, really, because the songs were still very good.
Oh, yeah, and there was just a bit of dialogue where the sisters were like, "We will save you," where I thought it was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, yeah.
Some things didn't need to be said.
We should say probably at this stage, we're going to get pretty spoilery now. So if you haven't seen Frozen 2 and you don't want to get spoilery, then maybe turn off now. 5, 4, 3, 2
Olaf dies!
Yeah, that's actually true.
Yeah, so actually, should we mention our predictions?
Okay, let's go in with that. So we had three predictions, as we said. We predicted that Olaf would die in a dramatic and sad way. We predicted that the trolls would play more of a pivotal role in the plot, and we predicted that there would be a green message at the heart of it.
A Greta Thunberg message.
Exactly.
And shall we say that we were just right with 2 out of 3 and not say any more? And, so we could limit our spoilers.
Well, all right, yeah, okay, let's not get too spoilery. Yeah, 2 out of 3 of those were essentially correct. Well, I'd say even 1.5 out of 3 of those were essentially correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we should just say we've already done a spoiler disclaimer.
Yeah. Okay, so Olaf dies.
Yeah. So but Olaf does die, but then comes back to life. So in a way, that scene was fulfilled, not the actual intention of what we. It didn't really. He didn't die in a self-sacrificial way, which is what we thought would probably.
No. Has a Disney character ever a lovable sidekick ever died before? I mean, they kill off the mothers with impunity, but
Ray. From Princess and the Frog is probably the saddest moment in the film. Ray the Firefly.
Oh, of course.
He dies.
Yeah.
And that's really heartbreaking.
Anyone else?
I'm sure there are more, but that was the first one that popped into my mind.
Because actually, they're so lovable. You think if they want a good emotional heft,
get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because in a way, because they have the kind of impunity of being the lovable sidekick, you sort of think, they're not going to die. You expect parental figures and kind of
impunity, right? Let me look that up.
Yeah, well, but do you know what I mean, though? It feels as though. Let's pause then.
Exemption from punishment or freedom from the injurious consequences of an action.
Yeah.
No, I guess that's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need to pause, Lawrence.
I was right.
Saying silly things.
I'll cut that bit out. A
little glimpse behind the scenes.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, so basically you don't expect the side characters to get killed or die, do you? You expect, like, parental figures and wise old shamans and people like that, they will die. In conventional family film storytelling.
Yeah, we were talking about Finding Nemo earlier and the death of the mother.
Coral,
yeah. And because we were going, was it necessary? Was it just emotional manipulation of the audience? Or, you know, was it necessary to the plot and the driving force of the plot? And actually, I think they could have kept her alive, you know?
We decided that it wasn't entirely necessary. It didn't take anything. It didn't cheapen it. It gives Marlin the drive to really, really be very protective of the one family member that he has left after losing his partner and all his eggs.
That protective over a disabled son anyway, couldn't he? That would have been an understandable extra bit of motivation for him on his own.
I think we came to the conclusion that it would have been absolutely fine to just have him be a single dad with just the one egg.
Have the mother maybe injured in the attack. And actually, we're completely getting off the point.
Yeah, this is probably irrelevant.
Yeah. Okay, back to Frozen. Yes.
So Olaf did die, but Olaf was brought back to life. Because Olaf, there's not really any justification for Olaf dying while Elsa is alive.
What's interesting...
Because she made him.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing. That's a massive spoiler because there's a huge cliffhanger as to whether they've taken the big, bold step of killing off Elsa.
It does kind of look like they might do that for a little while.
Yeah.
But her death is... If it was to be that step, her death was very quick.
Yeah.
That's what made me think, she's coming back.
Yeah, no, I felt confident too, but you know the kids in the audience wouldn't. Also, I think they needed to drive Anna to that deep, dark place, because I think the theme of the whole thing was, kids, we're heading into a really dark future.
Yes.
And the only way to get through it is to put one foot in front of the other and to concentrate on doing the next right thing.
That's literally a song, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a message that is in the mouths of several characters as well.
Yeah.
So they don't want us to miss that message.
And the fact that we're talking about the spirits of elemental forces, it does feel like a green metaphor.
Yeah.
Even if it's quite veiled.
The dam as well. There's a dam that is that you think is helping at first, that is stopping the destruction of Arundel.
Well, but that's the thing. It is stopping the destruction of Arundel, but only at the cost of starving the northern territories.
That's
of
it.
Their
so it's
water.
The idea of man-made technology injuring the planet,
yeah.
Essentially.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. And is there a way of saving mankind while also saving nature? And, you know, in typical Disney optimism,
of course there is.
Yeah.
You get a magic horse.
Oh yeah, there's some sparkly horses which the kids can go mad for.
There's some pretty dazzling animation in the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
And I know it's an old cliche now to go, the animation's amazing.
Oh,
but it's just so good.
The bit where she's battling her way across the water.
Which in fact was what they used for the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Almost that entire sequence uninterrupted was just the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a really bold... As I was watching it, I was thinking about that trailer and thinking what a bold choice.
And it didn't
was.
Take away from it, did it? So even though I'd seen most of it before, I was still like, cool, this is stirring.
Well, that was the sequence that really made me go, wow, I'd really want to see Frozen 2. It looks very interesting.
Yeah. So, right. So our predictions semi-correct.
So the trolls...
The trolls, yeah. So the trolls were not used. They were used less. They were in it, but they were used
less than
in the
first one. They had less
of
a role to play, didn't
they? Yeah, they are pure exposition tools.
Yeah, they're basically mission briefing.
Yeah. Hello, Anna and Elsa, this is what you need to do. Okay, bye.
And then, you will not see us until the end of the film.
Yeah, we are incredibly powerful, but we're not going to help you.
Are they incredibly powerful? No, they are, aren't they? They've got quite a lot of magic power.
They're absolutely brimming with magic. But all they ever do is go, I have seen the signs, and the signs say this. So go and solve it.
Some stuff's going to go down.
Yes, we're getting the hell out of here.
Yeah. We'll stay here and look after all these boring humans.
you, the humans who would normally look after the humans, you have to go and do the stuff that the trolls are much better suited to
do. The work of the magic people. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So they didn't really have much to do, but they were in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting decision to go, don't worry, we haven't forgotten there are trolls, but we're not going to use them.
I suppose they were kind of a device really used in the first film, and so to have them be a key device again... Maybe they thought, well, we've played that card already.
I think they probably realised that no one was buying the troll merchandise and went, now we're onto a loser here, let's concentrate on sparkling
horses. Let's do magic
horses
instead.
Yeah. I mean, actually, so an interesting part of it, so talking about themes a bit here, is the idea of growing up and taking on responsibility and things changing and change being difficult but having to embrace that change. And I was thinking about the audience of the first film. And as we were saying before, they're going to be tweens.
5 or 6 years older.
Yeah, yeah. And so it felt like the characters, by saying that, they were directly addressing those.
Well, there was a
kids.
Moment in the sort of opening ensemble song where Olaf steps right to the camera and basically breaks the fourth wall and says, you all look a lot older.
Yeah.
In song form.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, it's sort of, it almost, it did take me out of the action a little bit, that, because it felt
You might
like,
as well have
crikey.
Gone, but I bet you still like sparkly horses,
yeah.
don't you?
Yeah.
There was 1999.
It did feel like there were a lot of merchandising opportunities within that. In the moment where Anna's having her Dark Tea Time of the Soul song, where she goes, oh, everything's ruined. And
Well, it's a genuinely dark moment.
It
She's
is.
She's lost the last member of her family.
Yeah, she has nothing at that point.
Yeah.
So her boyfriend has disappeared, her sister is presumed dead, and the snowman has just melted before her eyes. So it is very dark.
Yeah. And we're reminded that her parents only died 6 years ago.
That's true, yeah, yeah.
So the stakes for her are incredibly high. Mm. By the way, if you hear chaos in the background, it's our cats.
You say that in every episode now.
Well, just in case they think we're scratching at the table or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not us.
But speaking of merchandise opportunities, it did feel, even in that sequence, I noticed that as she was, you know, going, oh God, all is lost, she was wearing this kind of really nifty little leather handbag, which I thought, man, the kids...
See, I didn't notice the handbag, so that merchandising thing works on you, but... I don't know, would kids though be like, oh, I want the handbag from Anna's, grieving scene?
Maybe, I don't know. It depends whether it comes as part of a, like, Anna in adventure mode costume.
Oh, the costumes were good. There was a lot of leggings and dresses over the top that sort of split in the middle so you could see the leggings.
Yeah, yeah, they were
pretty
cool.
And I thought, that is a cool outfit.
Yeah, yeah, it'd suit a lot of people, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and it's also, you can climb trees and have fun.
There were a couple of Elsa's costumes were quite odd in that she appeared to be wearing just body glitter and nothing else. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, the frost is part of her skin almost.
Yeah, yeah. It was unclear whether she was just covered in a kind of magical frost.
Well, didn't she have that in the first film? Didn't she sort of zap herself into a fabulous outfit?
Yes, but it is still very much an outfit. It looks like a dress. Whereas in this, she
looks
as though...
It was very Britney Spears, what was it? You know, when she was all sparkly in the video?
Yeah.
What video was that?
I can't remember what video it was.
Well, so the answers on the postcard, guys. Mm. In what music video was Britney Spears...
covered in body glitter.
Yes.
But, you know, that didn't pull me out of the action too much.
Yeah.
The fact that she was covered in Britney body glitter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also, you can see the costume in your head, which would be one of those net things.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, music. Let's talk about music.
Mm.
So I have a theory about the music, but although obviously you should talk more about the music because you're a music person.
Go on.
But my theory is that, you know, so after Frozen 1, or Frozen as it's called, all the kids were having Let It Go on repeat. And
yes.
It was driving parents absolutely bananas.
It became a bit of a sort of running gag that Frozen was driving everyone insane.
Yeah. So I think this time they've deliberately avoided anything that the kids can hum because the music's quite complex.
The music, it sounds to me more like Stephen Schwartz.
Right.
Who is the composer of Wicked. Maybe I'm just thinking about that because of the Idina Menzel connection.
No. I was thinking it sounded musical theatre.
It's more
as well.
Sophisticated somehow than
and
the
not
first one.
Just musical theatre, though, because, what's his face? Christoph has a song which is, I mean, very deliberately is very 80s, 90s.
Yeah, it's like a power ballad, isn't it?
Yeah, and the animators are having so much fun making him look like he's in a music video straight from the late 80s.
We both laughed in the cinema because just as he's about to start that song, there's like a really incongruous, very loud cutting guitar sound.
Yeah.
You get this real Brian May guitar sound.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, we're in for something a bit different here. And then he flops his floppy fringe out of his face, and I was like, oh, they're doing a thing.
They're doing an 80s thing.
And there's some deliberate pastiches of things like Queen. And
there's some split screen fun stuff with him in slow motion with lots of
spotlights.
Yeah, golden light. It was very Top Gun, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great.
It was
a really good sequence.
Yeah.
But it was the kind of sequence that the parents would enjoy. So that is my theory. My theory is that they've gone, okay, parents, don't worry. The kids aren't going to be singing all these songs to the point of madness. Mm. We're giving you a little song.
We're
you
giving
40
you
year olds.
Songs that you will enjoy and the kids won't remember.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good.
But they could also justify it by saying, a lot of music at the moment is very 80s, 90s revival.
True.
So yeah.
And everyone's grown up. The whole audience has grown up. So the kids aren't going to be so demanding of a, you know, a really child-friendly pop, you know, extravaganza like Let It Go.
Yeah, yeah. And also what was nice as well is the relationship between Christoph and Anna is quite mature as well. They've been together 5 years at this point.
Yeah.
They're still not married. He's trying to propose to her throughout the whole thing. And both of them are still a little unsure as to whether the other one is completely serious about the relationship.
Mm.
And it just felt like we were being shown a mature relationship as in direct contrast to the you can't marry the first man you meet sort of
idea.
Yeah. So they're continuing that idea from the first film where the normal Disney relationship where you clap eyes on someone and that's it, you get married in the next scene.
Is
not great.
Yeah. We interrupt this episode of Adults Do Disney to introduce our sister podcast, Mockery Manor is our sister podcast. It's a narrative drama series, audio series, set in a creepy, fictitious British theme park in the 1980s. It's nice and spooky-ooky, with a lot of good references to Disney and other theme parks and a lot of things you might recognise and enjoy. So please do subscribe to Mockery Manor. It's on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. It's on Stitcher. It's wherever you get your podcasts. So go on over and listen to Mockery Manor. And now back to our regular program. Another little point about the music. There's the sort of equivalent to Let It Go is this Into the Unknown, it's called, which does some quite cool things. It's got some bitonality.
So what does that mean?
Bitonality means that it's in two keys simultaneously, which if you do wrong, sounds very horrible. It sounds completely dissonant and nasty. But she is singing in a major key.
Right.
And the voice that's calling her is singing in the minor of the same key.
Does it have a specific emotional effect, that kind of?
Unsettling, usually, or just like kind of intriguing more than anything else. John Williams does it a lot. Almost all of Star Wars is in two keys simultaneously.
Right.
It's bitonal.
Yeah.
And they were doing a little bit of that in this. And you wouldn't get any bitonality in the likes of Let It Go. So yeah. It's like a more sophisticated sound musically. And this has been a criticism of this film, isn't it? Is that the songs are less memorable.
Yeah.
And I think they are, but
I really enjoyed them.
They're less, like, poppy. They're less catchy. They're less sort of hook-based.
There's a lot of, am I right in thinking, there's a lot of choral stuff or voices together stuff?
Yes, although that was the case in the first film as well.
Oh, okay.
They've got that, I don't know if it's necessarily a Scandinavian choral sound, but that recurring, the hi yana
Oh, yeah, but even in his song, his big 80s, 90s song, which is also covered by Weezer.
Yeah, in the end credits, it's Weezer.
And that reinforces my idea, it's for the parents.
This is music for the parents, isn't it? Yeah, people who grew up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, so even in that song as well, there's a lot of everyone's harmonising.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like you said, it felt like a direct reference to Queen, didn't it? Because he's surrounded by icy reindeer.
And someone else.
Who are all singing in it looks like the famous photo, Bohemian Rhapsody
definitely.
Thing, of course.
And it was really flicking at my brain in another way as well. Like, there's another singer or group.
Like a musical reference point.
And I can't think of it now. It'll come to me and then I'll
It's almost like a Boys to Men or something like that.
Yeah, it's a very specific thing that I can't quite put my finger on. But if I do remember it, then if I dredge it from my brain.
Insert fact. I think I was thinking of Foreigners Waiting for a Girl Like You. That's kind of the feel
of it.
It's
the ballpark, isn't it? It's definitely that vibe.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us what 80s, 90s songs... Christoph's song reminds you of.
Anything else about the music then, Mr. Music?
Well, I liked it. I thought it was richer, nicer, more going on, more complex.
Mm.
One thing about that Into the Unknown song is that it's also a shuffle beat, which is kind of the beat of the moment, really.
So
it's
give us the shuffle beat.
Well, the shuffle beat is like what Billie Eilish used for that Bury a Friend song. It's that...
Okay.
It's a shuffly sound.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the kind of really common beats of pop music at the moment, but it's like a slightly more sophisticated sound.
And it's a tiny bit, not threatening, but it's got guts, isn't it?
It's a bit more gutsy than a straight, what you normally call a 4-4. No, not a 4-4, just a 4-4
beat.
Oh,
wow, the cats are really going for it today.
Yes. I always say, let's shut them out, but no.
They're very Anna and Elsa, aren't they? Because we have a white, fluffy cat who's older. And a young tabby. Although, actually, the young tabby should be Ginger to be properly Anna and Elsa.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And yeah, I don't think Boomer's got any powers, though.
No,
anyway.
Boomer's power is just extreme stupidity.
Yeah, which he does weaponize quite a lot.
Yeah.
So there we go.
I have scars to prove it.
So we talked about everything. So I thought the character development was better this time around. I don't know if it's because we've been with them for another film as well. So we've had more time to...
Well, it meant that you could kind of... it's like the second season of a TV show. They've already been on a journey.
Yeah, so you jump straight in with them.
Yeah, you don't have to muck around... figuring out exactly who they are because we've already been on an adventure with them. So the stakes feel higher because it's like Anna's whole thing is that she can't lose her sister.
Yeah.
And It's almost like an obsession, isn't it?
Yeah. What's really nice, I found, was how they tied in something from the first film, the death of the parents, to the second one as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I felt like that was a mystery, a big old question mark, because it felt like a convenience last time around. It felt like a get rid of the parents again.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But by referring back to it, it actually feels like a relevant part of the plot and not just a convenience.
So the parents were travelling to the mystical river land.
Iceland.
Yeah. To get some frozen prawn rings.
Yeah.
And they, to in order to figure out what is the deal with Elsa, that was the what we're supposed to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, which is nice as well, because you do get the impression in the first film that they were a bit like, what do we do with the older one? She's a liability.
Yeah.
It felt like they did something with
that. Yeah, so in the first film, they lock her away for her own protection, in inverted commas, and then go and get shipwrecked, which seems like pretty just rubbish.
Yeah. Is there anything we feel it could have done better?
I mean, this is nitpicks, really. Like I said, I feel like some of the lyrics of the songs were very tell, not show, but then maybe that's just musical theatre.
I know, I feel like occasionally in the dialogue that was happening as well.
There was quite a lot of plot. It wasn't complicated. I don't think it was too hard to follow in the way that some
Any
people...
more than the first one, though? I don't think so.
I mean,
I think in a way it was classic hero's journey as well. It was establishing normality at the beginning. And the fact that everything was quite happy at the beginning, you know, everyone was getting on with things in Arendelle and it all looked very nice.
Yeah.
And then there was the call to adventure.
Yeah, and then darkness and then falls over the Shire.
And then the refusal of the call to adventure at first, with her going, no, everyone's happy, I don't want anything to change.
Yeah.
But then she takes the adventure.
Yeah.
She steps over the threshold and starts off on her journey.
Well, it becomes necessity, doesn't it?
Yeah, and a physical journey to the north and coming back with the key, the answer, and a new revelation as well. It was actually classic hero's journey, to the point where it almost felt like they had plotted it by numbers tiny bit.
Well, yeah.
Although the hero's journey is also very satisfying, so I don't know if it is by numbers. Because, I mean, Star Wars, George Lucas very deliberately followed the hero's journey.
Well, almost all adventure films follow that plot format, don't they, really?
Yeah,
It's just a really good plot format.
But there's a bit of a criticism in Hollywood at the moment that it's almost laid out like, right, here's the map, this is what we're going to do. Take it off one by one. Sort of slot characters into their roles and, you know, it becomes a bit factory made.
Right, yeah.
But if you do it well...
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's going to do it...
It's a rollicking adventure story.
They do it well, Disney.
Yeah.
I didn't have any problem with the plot, really. The only thing you've got these elemental spirits. You've got the magic horse is water.
Mm-hmm.
The big rock
dude.
Which
makes sense, because the idea of...
Yeah, white horses in the sea, right?
Yeah.
You've got the big rock dudes representing Earth.
Yeah. Rock dudes.
Yeah.
And as we know, that part of the world loves their metal, don't they? So
yeah, big rock dudes, yeah. And that kind of feels quite Scandinavian, doesn't it? Rock giants.
Yeah, yeah. Trolls.
And then there was fire was represented by a lizard, like a salamander, I assume. And I kind of was less into that.
They wanted to cutify one of them. So you had the beautiful horse that all the kiddies are going to buy. And the rock dudes were... they're not cute. And wind is a bit abstract.
Well, yeah, that was the last one, wind is...
Although they could have had a hilarious bird, and I wouldn't be surprised if in early iterations they were drawing hilarious
birds. Bird. Well, I was imagining a majestic bird, a sort of like eagle-like character. Because the whole point of wind in this film is it's represented by just moving leaves.
Actually, how much cooler would Elsa have been with a great big old bird on her arm?
Yeah, with a bird made out of leaves. I think that would have been
cool,
you know? So if you have a big eagle that can form and shapeshift from just the leaves that are being blown around in the wind, I think that would have been pretty
cool. Maybe they wanted one abstract one and one cutesy one. And so they might have been going between fire and wind, going, actually, fire is a tricky one, because fire is a destructive force. And you could argue that as far as elementals go, it's not really...
I think they could have looked to the world of Pokemon for this, because Pokemon are all intrinsically linked to various elemental forces.
So what are the fire ones?
Well, you get a horse with fire as a mane.
Oh, you couldn't have a second horse.
No, I know, but all I'm saying is that is a thing you could do. You have a creature that is made out of lava.
Not as cute, is it? Because that again.
What about Charmander? He's pretty cute. Or Charizard, the dragon. Could have been a dragon. Could have been a dragon made of fire.
Well, I guess a lizard is like a crap dragon.
I suppose it just. I think there was just a little incongruity between the various representations of the elements. That would be my only criticism. I feel like, you know, that having one be a tiny little lizard that you can hold in your hand and appears to be entirely physical, one which is a magic horse which disappears, one which is like a whole load of massive rock monsters, and one which is so ephemeral that it's literally just leaves being blown around. I feel like some more unification of those elemental forces might have been nice. That's my only complaint.
Yeah, maybe. I guess the lizard is also, though, merch opportunity.
Of course it is.
Although, actually, if you're a kid and you were like, can I have Frozen 2 merchandise for Christmas, please? Thinking, I want a sparkly horse and an outfit. And then you got the lizard.
What's this?
A plushie of the lizard. You'd be a bit like... Ugh.
Also, the lizard was a direct rip of the chameleon from Tangled. It almost felt like they copied and pasted.
Yeah, maybe that was the case. Who knows? So yeah, what else? Was anyone not used enough? Like I liked Kristoff's song. So.
No, I thought Kristoff was used well. I don't think anyone was not used enough.
Yeah.
I think all of the main characters served.
And Olaf was less irritating.
He was. He was better written, I think.
Yeah.
He had more jokes.
He had jokes that the kids would in no way have appreciated, would they? Because they were quite philosophical. His vocabulary alone.
His entire character arc was, I am older now and therefore I am starting to understand more things.
Yeah, so at one point he asked the kids, like, so how are you guys taking the emotional developmental issues that occur with maturity? It was literally that kind of vocabulary, apart from actually more difficult than
I
that.
Felt like it was actually, his humour was coming from having a ridiculous... basically cartoon character espousing bits of philosophical nonsense.
Yeah. His song as well was quite interesting because it was basically, when I grow up, I'll understand all this because adults know everything and I haven't grown up yet, so that's why I don't understand anything. Mm. And it's almost like I felt telling the kids, actually, it's going to be just as confusing when you get older, so don't expect the adults to sort this out.
Yeah.
I'm afraid you're our last hope.
Yeah.
Save the planet,
so
guys.
Save the planet. It's all coming back to that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we were basically right.
Yeah. But they did it well. And that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, none of that felt heavy-handed, actually.
Well, some of it felt a bit heavy-handed.
Well, I suppose some of the lyrics were.
The bit where they turned around after realising that they were half northern. Hey, turns out our mother's from Yorkshire. when they turned around and went, we are part of you, essentially. So we will save you to the people of the north. I did think... that could have just been implicit. You didn't have to actually say that.
Because
that sounds a bit like, we will sort it out, we are heroes.
Maybe that's for the kids. Otherwise the kids wouldn't get it. They wouldn't necessarily understand from
the
phrase.
They get that the heroes are going to save the day.
I suppose.
And the adults get it as well. So it's like, who is that for? We don't need to hear that. And it just felt a bit sort of, I don't know, clunky. But, you know, tiny, tiny criticism.
But overall, I think that was probably a more interesting film than the first one.
I think so. Actually, another tiny, tiny criticism.
Go on.
It took a little bit of a while to get going. So, you know how...
There's a lot of happiness at the beginning, wasn't
there? Yeah. So the hero's journey is establishing normalcy at the beginning. And then you get the call to adventure. I felt like the call to adventure was a little slow in coming. So I felt like they could have moved that forward a bit. But these are such small criticisms, because I'm actually reasonably impatient, and that's probably why.
Once we got going, it rollicked along nicely.
Yeah, and there were definite badass moments for our two heroines that were very stirring and enjoyable.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Go and see Frozen 2. It's a worthy addition.
Yeah, God, we've liked two of the things that I wasn't sure. Like Lion King, we really liked the remake of that as well.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not that easy to please. We might like Disney, but we don't like it blindly.
No, there's a lot of rubbish Disney.
Oh, yeah. Listen to our takedown of Tower of Terror. if you want to.
Do yourself a favour and probably don't listen to that.
If you want to hear us just bitching, then that's the one for you.
But they've come a long way.
Yeah. Although, you know, more Steve Guttenberg in all the Disney films.
Yeah, he's due a revival.
He is due a revival.
Yeah.
Unless he turns out to have a murky past or something. You don't know these guys, do
well,
you?
I mean, let's hope he
does. I don't want to cast aspersions. I know nothing about Steve Guttenberg.
I'm sure, let's not put any seeds of doubt about Steve Guttenberg. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Didn't we establish he is a nice guy? Hasn't he set up like a load of charities and stuff?
Oh, yeah. No, Steve Guttenberg
is a great guy. How do we get there from here? Let's finish. Let's wrap
put
it up.
Put him in Frozen 3.
Yeah, Frozen 3 starring Steve Guttenberg as Elsa.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Adults Do Disney. Please do interact with us online on our social media accounts on Adults Do Disney Instagram and Twitter. And we can also be emailed at, what is it, Lawrence?
It's adultsdodisney@gmail.com.
Yeah, so please do drop us a line. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like, I suppose.
But be nice.
And tell us what you'd like to hear from us in the future.
Oh, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple, because we love them.
Yeah, as long as it's a nice one that doesn't, you know...
You can be as horrible as you like about me.